talk to us about why so many dealers are turning to BDCs to help manage their calls and the impact it has on call conversion.
Customer is not the same as the one that's going to walk into your showroom. It's a different intent. It's a different level of confidence that that customer has. You know, we're trained to recognize facial expressions and body language and try to get them to physically move from one side of the dealership showroom to the other side so that you can kind of manage them in a certain way and lead them into a certain, area of the buying process.
Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us for today's Digital Dealer webinar. Today's webinar is presented by Car Wars and is titled Fireside Panel Automotive Marketing Masterminds. This webinar will run for about 1 hour, including a question and answer session at the end. So be sure to use the Q&A panel to enter your questions for our speaker throughout the event. And now I will hand things over to Cassie at Car Wars. Cassie?
Hi, welcome to our webinar. My name is Cassie Bramer. I'm Chief Revenue Officer at Car Wars. I am so excited about today. In Vegas at Digital Dealer, we were able to do the first ever fireside chats, and we had an amazing turnout. And the turnout was because of the great speakers that we have here today. They came to hear some marketing experts in automotive talk about different things that they're doing. So because we had such a great turnout there and we had so many people show up, we want to make sure that we had an opportunity to ask everybody more questions. So guys, thanks for doing this again with us. We really appreciate it. I think that we'll hit on some hot, fun topics today. So I appreciate it. Before we dive in, I want to go around the room and do some introductions. So Big Al, can we start with you?
If we have to, we can do that. Yeah. So yeah. So I'm Big Al. I'm Chief Marketing Officer at Feldman Automotive, Mark Wahlberg Automotive. Been in the industry for 24 years now, started off as sales, and now I'm the Chief Marketing Officer of the company, and I come and talk to you. And even though I don't know anything, I still do it. But I think the fireside chat went well because I was the first one to go off and we had no microphone, so no one could hear me talk. So I think that's why that was very successful.
It's because of the huge turnout. We weren't expecting such a big turnout, and you guys overwhelmed us with the amount of audience that we got. So now we'll give you a chance so that they can hear you. Thanks for joining us, Big Al. Jamie, you're up.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm Jamie Trabchak, and I have a couple of projects going. More to come on that. I won't announce it here because I didn't get official permission to do so. But I've been in automotive for 23 years. Have done work for OEMs, have done marketing, most recently vice president for of operations for a dealer group, have been a general manager, service director, salesperson, BDC director, creator. So lots of different things, fun and exciting stuff. So I'm happy to be here.
Thanks, Jamie.
I too did not have a microphone in Digital Dealer, but I think, I just have a big mouth and can be loud. So it worked out.
Jacob, I think by the time you went on, we had a microphone. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Yeah, I feel a little outcast here. I had a microphone. Everybody heard all the nonsense that I was spewing out that day. But my name is Jacob. Nice to see everybody. I am not in the car business. I know most of the audience here is currently, but I used to be. Right now I'm in power sports, so very similar verticals. Harley Davidson, metric stores. And right now my current project is I'm with Internet Sales Coaching. We do a lot of CRM. We do a lot of training techniques. Car Wars has been instrumental in helping me with that because we're able to audit and listen back to a lot of calls. But I also am with a company called Moto Hunt that is a software product, as well as doing digital marketing for dealerships that need it.
Well, thanks for being here, Jacob. We appreciate it. Last but not least, George Lawton, you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah. Hi, I'm George. I'm the marketing operations manager with Champ Automotive. We've got 12 rooftops across Colorado, Utah, and California. Hopefully we have about 4 or 5 more here in the next year if things go as we hope. I've been in the industry since 2007, so about 17 years. And I've started on the sales side in Dallas, Texas. Actually, I've been a Car Wars client ever since I've been in the automotive industry. And I moved over to the marketing side about 6 years ago. So I've been on both sides of the equation here with sales and marketing, and have been using Carboards ever since I started. So,
well, we appreciate your business, George, and the feedback that you give us. So thank you for being here. Another person that was going to be here today, and we feel sad that he's not, is Colby Joyner from Cavender. He got a little ill today, so he's not able to join us, but I'm sure he sends his best to everyone. So with that, we're going to jump in. George, I'm going to call on you first. Hope that's okay.
Sure.
One of the hottest topics we touched on at Digital Dealer is emerging automotive marketing trends. This industry has experienced immense shifts in communication preferences over the past few years, right? We of all people know that. From Hyundai, quote unquote, selling cars on Amazon, videos being a preferred outreach method, customers are demanding new way of selling cars. So what's one trend, George, that you've seen that's taking off and really working well for you to garner customer attention?
Do you mind if I mention a couple? Because I think there's a few that are really important here. Please. I think, digital retail is number one, video, text communication, and even video conferencing. With digital retail, it's been rising for the past few years, but I really do believe it's just in its infancy. It's only going to continue to improve and make it easier for customers to purchase cars online, and not necessarily eliminate the dealer, but the dealer will have less of an impactful role in the purchase of the vehicles. So it's very important that we put attention to that, as well as text messages. That is the current method of preferred communication from many customers. They want to text with people just like they text their counterparts. And then with video, all of the social media channels and the most popular websites right now that people are consuming most often, they like to consume through the medium of video. So utilizing video in your sales process, your service process, your follow-up and everything like that is imperative. And you can even incorporate that into video conferencing, where you can discuss terms of deals and things like that with customers from the convenience of their home. They don't necessarily need to go into the dealership. What we're trying to do with all these things is make it more convenient for people to shop and conduct business in the modern way that they're doing everything else in their lives.
Great. I love it. And texting for us too. That's been the biggest thing that we've been working on over here. So I get it, and it's important. Jacob, in Vegas, you shared some cool things with regards to social media marketing and capitalizing on this often underestimated communication channel. I loved what you shared in Vegas about what was nice to have and need to have. So can you remind us what you talked about there and kind of expand on that a little bit with regards to social?
Yeah. Thank you. And it was great to be there, by the way. Had a lot of fun just kind of chatting with you and, kind of going over some of these topics there. But what I've learned, I've had a wide difference of different stores and different brands to work with in the last decade or so with my former company. But the nice to have and the need, it's really going to be dependent on the dealer's commitment to the platform and how much emphasis or energy they want to put into this output of content that these social media platforms demand, right? It literally is feeding the beast. And what I meant by nice to have and needed by dealerships is that, if you just want to have a Instagram or a TikTok account because you see your competitors doing it, or you think it's the hot topic, but you're not really committed to it or have a person dedicated to it, it's probably not a good idea to put forth the effort to even start up an account until you have that kind of infrastructure in place. But when you do, when you have some commitment level to it, you're either putting some budget behind it, you're making organic content, or you're doing paid advertisements on these platforms, it really can be the difference maker to accompany all the other diversified place that you're putting your ad dollars, such as like Google and other traditional places like SEO and email newsletter content. So, what we talked about in the fireside was more or less picking a platform that you either like or that you personally use as an operator, or your team votes on which one is the most popular, because you don't know everything coming from the top, right? And so really just kind of moving forward platform by platform. If Instagram is your preferred platform, then put some effort into that and see where it goes. Test it. Try some different content. And then the last quick point I'll make on this is that, you really want to make it more entertaining, right? People aren't all that receptive anymore to the kind of corporate-y, here's our specials and here's the promos. And we were just inundated with that for the last couple of weeks with Black Friday and all the holiday sales going on. But what people are resonating with, especially on the organic side of the social media content nowadays, is an entertainment aspect. And at the Digital Dealer conference, I sat in two different TikTok seminars that talked about how TikTok is not a social media platform. They they classify themselves as an entertainment platform more closely related to Netflix or Prime Video than they do Facebook or Instagram. It was just very interesting stuff. So that's my comments.
If you're a motorcycle and power sports dealer, you already know the biggest marketplace websites are clunky, slow, and riddled with ads. Even if you pay big bucks to list your inventory, your competitors can pay even more to outrank you. That's why we created MotoHunt. Our site is famously streamlined and quick, with no extra nonsense to confuse buyers or dealers. That's why we rank so high in search results without having to spend millions in advertising. Why pay three times as much? At MotoHunt, one low price covers everything a dealer needs to get their inventory listed and collecting leads fast, with no multi-level pricing tiers and no way for your competition to out-premium you. No matter how many listings or leads you generate, your subscription price is the same. Click the link to find out how MotoHunt can help you start generating more leads today.
So Heather, our head of marketing, and I were talking about social this morning, just as our own business, right? Trying to make sure that we got this webinar information out on our social media posts. But expand a little bit, you know, when there's this whole sea and all these dealerships, all these power sports companies trying to make a play there. You know, you talked about the entertainment factor, but is there anything else that you do to make yourself stand out so you're just not in the rest of the mix with everyone else?
Well, that's going to be a little easier said than done. and it's just that exactly, right? Is what you're saying. And it's more or less finding your voice. What kind of content do you want to try, or what kind of content do you want to commit to for a quarter or half a year or even a full year? Is there going to be a spokesperson at the dealership, right? I've seen a lot of different accounts that I'll browse through randomly that are dealership based, and they have one or two people that are majority of their videos. Now, you come as a follower, you come with a level of expectation to say, I see this person, I relate them to this business, this XYZ dealer, and I know what kind of content I'm going to get if they're on my feed and I'm following them. But again, in the sea of all the different social medias that are out there, and some new one will come tomorrow and a new one after that, it's always this mounting snowball of social media that we have to deal with as consumers and as business operators. It's just, again, find a voice and pick a platform and just start there. And once you start to get a little bit of a following, or you get a little bit of engagement, which are not the metrics to say that you're successful or not, by the way, but once you get a little bit and you start to hear the feedback from the customers now coming into your store saying, hey, I saw this on TikTok, or I saw that on your Instagram, you'll start to resonate a little bit more, and you can now feed that machine a little bit more with what people want to see.
Great. I like that feedback. Big Al, you don't have any vendors that ever call on you, right? Nobody calls and tries to sell it to your 20 dealerships, but
I just had three calls while you were talking.
So when you are in the market for a new technology or software partner, how critical is the initial training and ongoing training to make sure that the software is adopted well at your dealerships? And can you tell us some stories about things that have gone well and who's done that right?
Well, clearly it's critical. It's very important, you know, and, you know, the approach I've always taken on, especially any new technology, is, you know, first of all, you need buy-in from management all the way down. You know, I can't go into Digital Dealer in ADA and say, hey, I met this new company, I signed up for it, guess what? It's coming into your store next week. You know, I got to have my managers look at it and believe in it first. The people who do it well, though, as far as training, are the vendors who don't have a set curriculum. You know, let's say they have, okay, this is how we like to do this, but they start a conversation with us. What is your process? So many digital companies out there, they create a great software, and then all of a sudden they try to redefine how our process should work in the store. Hey, our process works fine. Your technology needs to follow our process. And so when they start that conversation and then they mold their training, instead of saying, I have the set curriculum, I can come in and mold it to how you want. Those are the dealers or the vendors that work very well with us. And those are the ones I have. But it's a continuation. You know, it's not like I come in, we sit down and we do a 2-hour class and all of a sudden you're going to remember how everything works. It's I have to come out every week, you know, and I have to talk to you every month. It's one of those things that's a nonstop conversation, you know, because we all know it's like when you're on when you're on a floor and getting it, I come from sales. You know, it's like I have the attention span of a goldfish. You know, so it's like, you know, so you sit in a room, you sit for an hour, I retain like 2 minutes of what you said. You know, so it's like, you know, you got to have real time conversation with people, you know, and the average person doesn't take well to like classroom type learning. It's, I can sit here and I can explain to you, hey, this is how Car Wars works. This is how, you know, the reporting works. But until it goes live and you're actually doing it, you need to sit there with them. So as far as the education part, it's just, it has to be ongoing all the time. And it has to come from our store management as well. That goes back to what I said right there, is whatever technology, you know, a long time ago, I said, I will never force technology on any store unless they want it. I will advise it, you know, I think this is great stuff. I think you should look at it, you know, and if you think it works for you, because once they have that buy-in, then they believe in it and they'll go behind it as well.
And the minute you try to force it, it's doomed to fail. It'll crash.
Well, exactly. And I call it the three C's. Okay. People don't want to lose control. They're afraid of change and they like to complain. Okay. So those are the three C's with technology. I mean, it's one of those things, like the second they think they're going to lose control, they lose it, you know, and like, oh, you're going to change things on me. And then complaining, they love to complain because it's the easiest thing to do. So it's eliminate the three C's and then you can move forward.
That's great. I love it. George, you know, all of us, no matter if we're on the vendor side or the dealer side, you know, speaking of technology, CRM is such a big thing. And I know you live by the phrase, you know, we both have lived by this for a long time. If it's not in CRM, it didn't happen. Talk with us about why it's so important for any software you're considering to integrate with your CRM. I mean, that's so important. And talk to us about that. And how do you enforce keeping your CRM organized and up to date with your team and keeping them using it?
Yeah. Everything that we do in our marketing efforts at Shomp is based around two key metrics or KPIs. And we base them around the cost per lead and the cost per car sold. That's what we use to measure our success of any type of campaign that we do. And the only way that you can measure that is if you have a centralized place where everything arrives so that you can know how many leads you're getting, of those leads you're getting, how many of them you're selling, right? So it's imperative that we get every single effort we put forth in marketing, we get into the CRM, and so that we can quantify it and then see what type of quality we're getting from those opportunities. It's even more important now, especially with the emerging privacy laws that are kind of being shoved down everybody's throat. We can no longer go out and buy these lists of customers. So having that first party data in your CRM in a place where you can reference all of these opportunities and do continual marketing efforts, whether that's audience building for social or retargeting or email marketing, text message marketing, video, whatever you want to do, but you've got to have that information to be able to reach out to those contacts. So that's phase one, is you got to get everybody in there so that you can start to do these marketing efforts in the future. But in order to have relevant information in the future and to be able to hit people with information that is relevant to them, you have to know who they are and what they were interested in. So there's a common phase that we use when we have our marketing meeting with our stores, and it's fill the card. And we call the card like the customer card. First name, last name, email, if you know what state or address, and very specifically, what type of vehicle were they looking for? A lot of records, especially that originate on the phone, may hit the CRM. And of course, the phone tracking system, no matter what it is, isn't going to know what car the customer was interested in. That requires some manual data entry. So you've got to get that information in there. So we use BI, business intelligence, actually, to view our data on a massive scale and look at that information and share it with our sales departments and say, this is how many opportunities you got. This is how many were new and used and where they came from and what type of channel. And of those opportunities, these are how many were missing names, we're missing vehicles, we're missing all this information. And then we monitor and measure to those KPIs, trying to get as many of those opportunities as possible with an associated vehicle of interest, some data for the customer so that we can in the future market to them, assuming they don't buy right now. So bringing all that together is really, really important for all of your future marketing efforts. And it just helps you it'll help you to sell more cars and have more information with more data, right?
It's all about the data. Speaking of data, Jamie, I'm coming to you. This is a long question. Okay, you ready?
I love language data.
Let's talk about the importance of using real data and technology to help manage a dealership team. A common misconception when it comes to leveraging data to manage people is that it can be seen as too inflexible or negative, or not tell the whole picture. Can you tell us how you overcome that misconception and use data as a positive influence to encourage growth?
Absolutely. Well, first and foremost, I think it's important for everybody to understand, you know, that data itself, right, is facts and statistics for reference or analysis. It's not for management. And so often, I think in the car business, we've used, you know, a data set to take the place of managers and take the place of conversation and collaboration. And so the very, very important thing is it's a reference point. So, you know, like as an example, say we have a salesperson who has a, you know, an SSI score of 60. As a manager, you know, maybe in old school days, maybe I did this, maybe I didn't. I'm not going to admit to anything, right? I've grown and matured and I'm more emotionally intelligent today. We'll just leave it at that. But hey, you know what? You're doing a horrible job with our customers. You know, either get your score up or you're fired. Right. And I could just look at their 60 SSI score out of 100 and do that. And it's such poor management because I'm using that data to manage versus saying, okay, let me take a step back. I'm going to drill into this. And what if it were that, you know, that 60 came from three surveys that came in, there's 200 surveys and there's 10 survey. Okay. Well, I could stop there as a manager, be like, you know, what are you doing? How did you drop the ball on this zero? To me, when we start diving in and learning how to drill into data and use technology, what if I uncover as the manager that that zero score came from a response from a customer that said, I got a recall notice the week after I purchased the car, so I'm giving you a zero. It has nothing to do with the salesperson, right? There's nothing that they could have or should have done different. So now I just quite possibly, you know, ruined a relationship and a buy-in from a salesperson because I managed them in not the right way. And so I think it's super important that we learn how to dive in, how to drill in, use data as an analysis point and a conversation starter, right? It's going to help to improve overall relationships, but then we get more of an understanding also about all of the inputs. Instead of just focusing on the output, we need to start focusing on, you know, the inputs, I think, inside of our retail operations and frankly, inside of the vendor operations too. It's for all of us in this business. We all have such a high sense of urgency. That's like, oh, I see something. I've got to say something and do something. I have to take action from it. But learn to just tamper that down a little bit. Take action on the right types of things, because then we're going to get lasting results. Does that answer your question?
It did. I'm going to expand on another thing that was pretty popular when you were talking in Vegas, and that you have the background in Six Sigma and leveraging that approach to management. Talk to the group about what Six Sigma is and how you recommend dealers apply that knowledge.
Sure. Well, Six Sigma, it's a methodology, but what I'm coming to learn is that it's more of a, it is a mindset. Now there's actual, you know, steps that you take, but what drew me to the Six Sigma process is what it really stands for in that culture of continuous improvement and quality, right? And the whole principle behind Six Sigma is that it's optimizing organization or process really from the inside out. And so we start focusing internally instead of we get caught up. And I love digital media. I love digital marketing. I love everything on the outside of a car dealership. I truly, truly do. But oftentimes we don't put enough time and attention on the inside, right? On our people. How do we carry out the vision and the culture of what's happening inside of our stores? And so learning Six Sigma and a process behind initiative, et cetera. If we take that, let's just take that same example that we just talked about with, you know, utilizing data. In a Six Sigma type of approach, what I would have done is following and defining what our expectations are and what this initiative is, say, behind SSI, right? And during the onboarding process, because I've gone through and I've already defined out, I've done the measurements, I've analyzed that data, come up with how do we improve these things, and I'm controlling it, but I introduce that when somebody first starts. Or, you know, when we're creating that process using a Six Sigma outline, we have collaboration amongst team members and stakeholders inside of the dealership because of the ultimate importance of putting together a process or a standard operating procedure. Oftentimes it's just high level managers doing it, right? And I get that's part of your role. The problem is sometimes because of our elevation level, we don't get all of the story of what's happening on the ground. And so in Six Sigma projects and initiatives, you pull in stakeholders from all around the dealership. So for example, you know, on an SSI thing, Right. Well, that the recall example I know doesn't apply to this category, but I would want to talk to, you know, my service advisors, because there's a question on the sales survey that talks about an introduction, you know, to the service department, right? Was your first service appointment scheduled? I want to bring in my service advisors into that process. Do I have a BDC? I want to bring BDC individuals, and it doesn't have to be in particular a manager, but what we're doing is we're creating a culture of where all voices inside of our store matter, and you have a say in the initiatives that we're trying to adopt. And the key that comes from this is not only do we have people that truly feel like they have a voice and a seat at the table, they're important, they matter. The other part of it is when we agree as a Six Sigma team on this initiative or process, and we go to bring it out to all of the teams, it helps to create a shorter adoption time and less pushback, because you have people that, you know, aren't necessarily the managers telling people what to do. These are people that inherently, because they were a part of the process, are going to show people what to do, you know, and bring them into the fold. And so we can be intentional about having every person on our team understand the processes and procedures inside of our dealership. But we have to take the time to create them, analyze them, document them, share them. You know, we're collaborating about them and we're measuring it. Everybody understands the game that we're playing and how we keep score. And when they do that, listen, in this example of the SSI, if somebody did have a lower than expected SSI, and you take these types of approach, the team member comes to you. I would, as a manager, I want my team to come to me and say, listen, you know what, Jamie, I'm sorry. You know, I know I didn't meet the expectation here on this, and here's how I see this. You know, I'm not quite sure about this. Can you let me know what to do? Instead of me having to go out and do that, I want people to start to come directly to me, right? Because they're taking ownership of what their expectations are, what my expectations of a team member are. And it's absolutely amazing what it can do for a culture, because everybody is pulling in the same direction. So sorry, I get so excited here. Can't be talking about it, but it's about culture and it's about the people. And again, what I love about, you know, a Six Sigma approach to it is we also have data and measurements that can be done, because there's statistical analysis that you can do that says, here's where I'm at today, here's where I need to be. And by an increase in a small little level of a sigma, you know, how I'm maximizing on my opportunities, it's amazing what that does, not only from an output standpoint, right, from a production or a revenue, also expense reduction. It's stunning, absolutely amazing when you do the study, stunning.
Well, I love that you're talking about the people, because it all starts there. If we don't have a plan to make sure that we've got the right people and engage our people and make sure that we've, you know, we're continually educating and making them, you know, aware of what their resources are, I think we're dropping the ball considerably. I'm going to shift back to marketing a little bit. George, you know that you partnered with us years ago when we were the first ones in automotive to start rolling out DNI, dynamic number insertion. And you mentioned earlier about the data and how important it is. So as you guys know, DNI is the ability to rotate numbers based on the user session, even down to the keyword level, integrated into Google Ads, you know, all of that information. So if you're on this webinar, you probably know what DNI is, you know, and then leverage it with Google Analytics. But George, can you talk about how dealers could be using that better, how you guys use it? Is it important? How is DNI helping you make smarter decisions?
Yeah, well, DNI is one of my favorite features of Car Wars, because it just adds that extra layer of visibility and data that doesn't exist with every other phone tracking provider. But, you know, when it comes to your Google Ads or any of your marketing efforts, we're spending tons of money on third-party marketplace channels like Cars.com, Auto Trader, and all these places. We're spending a bunch of money on Google paid search. And what we want to be able to do is really quantify what our ROI is, and what I said earlier, our cost per lead and cost per car sold is from each one of these investments we make with all of these different channels. Because, you know, a dealership's marketing budget is quite substantial. So the more data we have to know how well they're performing, the better. And what DNI allows us to do is we can look at those reports and see how many sessions we're getting on our websites from paid search or from these other channels where customers may start their search. Then we can see, once they get to our website, well, what do they do then? Are they moving from page to page? How long are they spending, and what are they doing to convert? And we can look at all of that information kind of holistically, and that factors into our cost per lead and then our cost per car sold. Because what we see for many of our vendors, that we spend money with is they send us a certain amount of leads per month, whether those are email submitted leads or phone leads or chat leads. But then they also send us this traffic that gets to our site. And is that traffic converting, right? And then we know what our true cost per opportunity is with that vendor. And the most important thing is knowing that we feel is knowing the score, because all of these vendors will come to us and say, this is what we've done for you. And they'll tell you, they'll hand you a report of how much traffic they're generating and how great they're doing, and pats on the back, and sometimes rightfully so. But sometimes we have to say, well, yeah, you know, you sent us all this web traffic, but nothing converted, nothing happened from it. So really, it was not important to us. It didn't really move the needle. But then there's the other flip side of that, when some of these vendors actually send quite a bit of traffic to your site that does convert and results in leads and opportunities. So having all that information to know where they're, how these people are getting to our sites, what they're doing, how well those channels are performing, allows us to know the score. And that's what we utilize to negotiate our contracts with vendors, which we have regular negotiations with them, and we ensure that everybody is meeting our expectations on what we're spending and what they're delivering. And that's just a healthy way of doing business. So we are all on the same page.
Hey guys, this episode is brought to you by Moto Hunt Premium. Moto Hunt Premium empowers power sports dealers with data and technology to give the best possible market advantage on every vehicle at your dealership. Moto Hunt Premium offers a suite of features such as real-time market analysis, inventory management, and up-to-date pricing guides like JD Power and NPA. Dealers love to leverage the platform to identify potential inventory risks and potential issues with your online listings. And it also helps to execute make and model strategies, enabling dealers to help move inventory faster and make more profit. To start leveraging our technology at your dealership, go to motohuntpremium.com. That's motohuntpremium.com to learn more and request a free inventory audit for your dealership today.
I love it. I was talking to Alex Vetter at cars.com about that just last week, you know, how important D&I was, so that, you know, we know that cars.com sends a lot of traffic to our sites, but our CRMs report one ad source, right? They say it's your website, and we all know it's not your website. And right. one day we'll get some subsources in there with some categories so we can really see inside a CRM where those sources came from. We'll get there, guys. We all keep working together. Al, we're going to keep talking about this customer journey.
Yeah.
And why it's so critical to have the insight into the complete customer journey that led to whatever type of conversion you're looking for, right? Phone call, walk-in, internet lead. How do you leverage that information with your group? Did we lose Al? Big Al.
You hear me? Am I having a bad internet connection?
Oh, there you go. Okay, you're back.
Sorry. No, what I was saying is there's not much I can really say about that George and Jamie really didn't go into. You know, it's, you know, the key thing about tracking that, and again, going in like with the DNIs and stuff like that, is so we're tracking our own data. You know, it's like, I don't know how many third-party companies have come in, you know, and said, hey, we're killing it, you know, on our platform. Look at all the leads I provided, all the calls I provide to you, you know, and then you go through their data. And I'm like, well, man, this is the same person. They called back six times because, you know, they couldn't connect, you know, that wasn't six calls. It was one person, you know, it's, you know, being able to get our own data and make our own decisions, you know, and Jamie said something that I really like, you know, it's about, you know, when we get the stats and the data, you know, we don't manage with that.
I'm hearing about every other word. Is everybody else hearing about every other word?
Yeah.
If you have to kick me off the call, that's fine.
Oh, you're back. You're back again.
Back. I apologize. Apparently, the internet's not working where I'm at. Anyway, what I was saying is, you know, like what Jamie was talking about, you know, it's like you get that information, you know, you don't manage off that. It's a baseline, you know, to make educated decisions. You know, you can't sit there and say, hey, I saw a campaign here. This was successful. I don't necessarily have to shift my entire budget to that, but now all of a sudden it's like, okay, let's make an educated decision based off this is successful here. Maybe I shift a little money here and I pull a little bit out there, you know, but getting all that real-time data and having it ourselves, it's just critical, because if all the data we're getting is being provided to us from third parties, you know, your digital agencies or any other agency like that, they do care about us. Okay. And I'm, you know, we're partners with you, you know, it's like, I know you do care, but of course, you know, you're looking at your self-interest too. You know, it's like, that's the thing I've always loved about numbers. I can make them say whatever story I want, you know? So let's get our own information. Let's look at our own story and not listen to the story that's being told to us from other people. So that's why that's very key.
And I get all fired up about it when an agency or a ad provider wants to use their own tracking lines because it's not only is it, you know, you want to report on your own numbers, right? I mean, I always said, I only use my own numbers because I don't want you telling me what my data is. I want to do it. But there's so many other things, right? When you have one call tracking line pressing to another one, you know, you get double disclaimers. They try to share in a CRM and it goes in as an internet lead, but it was really a phone up. They don't have spam filters, you know, like we set up with you guys. So there's a million reasons not to do it. And it's a battle that, again, one of those other battles that we're having out there, but shoot, use your own tracking lines. You know, tracking lines are free from all the providers out there, whether you're using us or anybody else. And you should have your own tracking lines to really measure those guys and never do the double bounce and the double share into CRM. That's just bad.
Yeah.
You got to have, if you don't have spam filters going, then you're going to get bombarded and you don't want to, you know, maybe a provider likes to show 500 calls, but I want to see the 20 real calls. You know,
right.
I get wound up about that one. Jacob, we hosted a whole webinar, big webinar with you, talking about BDCs and their importance in dealership efficiencies, even on the power sports side. So talk to us about why so many dealers are turning to BDCs to help manage their calls and the impact it has on call conversion.
Because it's tough, Cassie. Mm-hmm. I mean, that customer is not the same as the one that's going to walk into your showroom. It's a different intent. It's a different level of confidence that customer has. And you need a specialist that is trained in talking to those digital customers at their pace, right? So, I mean, let's just break it down. I'm sure majority of us have dealt with salespeople. I was one, so I'll speak as one. But, you know, we're trained to recognize facial expressions and body language and try to get them to physically move from one side of the dealership showroom to the other side so that you can kind of manage them in a certain way and lead them into a certain, area of the buying process, right? You don't have any of those luxuries when you're talking about phone sales or digital sales. And so that's why BDCs, essentially, in my opinion, were created, is because you have two types of specialists for the dealership sales personnel, one to handle floor sales and one to handle phone or internet sales. And again, these people are trained with different techniques that would allow people to use their voice or do a certain type of listening, right? There's all these different, words and fancy, you know, claims that people like to make on how they do their training, but essentially you're just looking at a different skill set. And the reason why so many dealers are, you know, more or less turning to the BDC structure or call center or internet sales department, whatever you want to call this certain group of people that handle this, is because they know that their salespeople are dropping the ball, right? For the hybrid teams, you have a very big job that you have to manage your floor sales as well as your digital sales. But 9 times out of 10, the ones that we inspect, and I'm sure the other people on this call would somewhat agree, that things are just falling through the crack when that happens. You have to have immediate responses with immediate answers with trained individuals to answer that phone call at all business hours of the day, every day. You can't have a customer go, submitting a lead on your website and then wait an hour for your showroom sales guy to finish up with their customer before they call the customer back to answer any questions. It's just not what people expect anymore. So really, if anything, we're more or less just falling into line the trends that customers are demanding nowadays from online relationships. Call it the Amazonification, right? We expect our package to be delivered now at the best price possible, and have zero interactions with a human until we want to, right, as consumers. And that's really all that where that's coming from nowadays. We're just trending into that type of customer catering.
I'm sure Big Al's going to hit on this too, but with regards to KPIs on how you manage that team, what are a few basic things you look for?
Yeah, I've always been of the 5x50 rule. A lot of other trainers or other people who could develop their own processes, they might have a couple different measuring sticks. But the 5 KPIs, at least for a BDC's output, the inbound web leads and inbound phone calls I just kind of namely call opportunities. Mm-hmm. Those are going to be variable. They're going to be fluctuating depending on your marketing, seasonality, inventory, all those different other factors. Affect the different sources and amount of volume that you would get for inbound calls. But as far as a BDC's effort goes into the outbound, that's definitely things that you can control. And so that's probably the first KPI that I would say is the most important, is that if you've got a dedicated people of phone specialists, what is their daily output? And that's on a per person aggregated into a per department. And that's the top line number. How much productivity, how many phone calls can I make outbound? How many text messages can I do? How many emails can I do? And then it goes into a contact engagement from there. That would be the second KPI. So of all these people that I'm contacting through whatever means necessary with a prioritization of the phone call being first, how many people are actually answering the phone? How many customers say hello when I dial them? Mm-hmm. We look at all the stats out there, and what we typically come back with over large data sets over a period of time is usually around 30-40%, right? Some have better luck at getting a hold of customers than others. Mm-hmm. But once we're talking to a customer, then it all kind of falls in line mathematically from there. During our phone call that we've contacted them, we're going through the technique, through the probing, through the question rapport building, and we're setting appointments. So that would be the third KPI, is how many appointments can we set with a particular agent through their database of customers. And then from there, it's pretty easy. How many shows are coming in from those appointments that you set, and how many sales are happening from those shows? And so the baseline there that we have is usually around a 50%. You should be selling about half the people that show up. Yep. And you should have half the customers showing up that you've set appointments with. And you should be setting appointments with about half the people you talk to, and you should be connecting with about half the people that you top line outbound call or email or text.
I like it. Shown appointments, right? If you don't get an appointment to show, you're not going to sell that 50%. So it's all about that process of making sure that happens. Big Al, you guys have a call center. Talk to us about, does the call center handle sales, service calls, inbound, outbound, both? The amount of agents, I have a lot of questions on this, but just kind of go over the whole details and then the benefits that you've seen. We hear a lot of calls that come from there because you use CarWars in there, but give us some details on that and some success.
So the call center we operate right now is strictly a service call center. It's a centralized service call center that we run. We found the effectiveness of doing a centralized sales call center, it just didn't work. Everybody who's on this call right now, they understand there's a disconnect. You know, when somebody's sitting in a building three states over, you know, they don't know if the vehicle's on the lot. The sales side doesn't work. So we've actually, on the sales side, allowed each store to kind of figure out how they want to do their BDC. Some of them do a mixed way. Some of them do straight BDC. Some of them don't have a BDC at all. But as far as our service call center, they take inbound, they take outbound. The biggest thing that, at least that I've noticed, is the customer satisfaction for the in showroom or the in service drive customer. You know, Jacob talked about that right there. You know, it's like, you got the showroom customer, you got the online customer, you know, and we've all been in that situation. The busiest time at the service lane is at the end of the day and the beginning of the day. And so you come in, you got your 7 o'clock appointment, you pull in, and the service writer's sitting there on a phone call, and you're sitting there waiting for them to get off the phone call. You're waiting for them. You had your appointment. And so what we've done is we've freed up the service drive. So our service writers are taking 100% attention on the customers in the drive and not focused on the people calling in, because the people calling in, especially with service, they're expecting to set appointments. You know, they don't need to be tying up that person. We want that person on the service drive being 100% attention to our customers. So we noticed CSI going up completely. You know, our RO count went up as far as customer pay. So those are some of the biggest things that we notice in moving to, you know, a centralized service BDC.
There's a whole debate. I'm off script here now, but there's a whole debate about, you know, how are we on the sales side? If we send all of our sales calls to a BDC and internet leads, then what do the floor reps have to deal with? And I know there's pros and cons to both, and we've seen people switch from one to the other. But George or Jamie, do you guys have any feedback on that? What's your approach, George, at your group?
Our approach is, I'll make sure I'm not muted. Yeah, our approach is identical to Big Al's. We do have a centralized service BDC, and our sales department there's no BDC. We're a single point of contact organization where the salesperson is supposed to conduct the entire sale from start to finish. So it wouldn't even fit with our business model in the first place. But I've actually never worked in a dealership that had a sales BDC. I've worked in numerous dealerships that had service, and I know that it does work for some, and some dealers prefer not to do it, but I know there's benefits and advantages, disadvantages to both, but our experience is service BDC. And I agree with what Al says. You free up your service advisors to attend to the customers. As long as they're getting back to the customers on service status calls, that's the only thing you have to pay attention to.
That's the struggle is real with that, for sure.
Yeah. Well, I want to follow up on that too, on something Jacob said, and also George said as well. You know, especially on the sales side, I always use the analogy of, you know, like, you know, like when you're trying to sell a car, you're trying to get a lead in or whatever, it's like going fishing. We've all been fishing at least once in our lifetime. You know, you do a lot of casting, you know, and you reel it in, cast, reel in. The second you get one on the hook, you don't put your fishing pole down and try to find somebody else to reel it in for you. And that's what a lot of our BDCs are set up in a lot of sales departments, you know, with the appointment setting. You know, going back to like what George said, you know, it's like we want somebody talking to that person all the time. And Jacob said that as far as skill set, I think where a lot of stores fail in sales BDC is they don't have qualified people talking to your customers.
Yeah.
Pure and simple. I think a sales BDC works, and we work with that. We do a centralized digital retailing within our group, you know, where it's 100% end to end. But the people
we lost Big Al again.
Right at the good part too.
The good part. I was like, oh my
God, I'm like, what's up?
We can't afford the internet here.
You're spending too much on your service BDC payroll.
Exactly. That was good. But anyway, long story short is sales BDCs, I do believe, can work. But again, you need this right skill set. You need properly trained people who can answer the questions. Not like, okay, when can you come in? I need to have you talk to my manager. Can you have an intelligent conversation? Because, you know, and Jacob said that a lot, you know, with the digital customer and then showroom customer. By the time they're talking to us, whether it was a digital customer or not, they're ready to transact. You know, people aren't talking to us at a store unless they're ready to transact. And so when they're ready to do that, they want to talk to somebody who can.
I think the biggest thing that Big Al's talking about, and you have to, either way, you have to make sure that your team is trained. If you're going to have your sales floor do this and take the calls, you better make sure that you have a way to train them and hold them accountable and make sure all those phone ups are logged in CRM. And, you know, that's the most important thing. Yeah. Get them right to the people that can do the transaction, but you better inspect what you expect. And, you know, we've all listened to calls and cringed, and you've got to make sure that you're playing calls. You know, the best stores play calls every day at the sales meeting, like randomly pull up a call and play it. And you've got to train them. Jamie's all about training and making sure that we focus on the people. And if you're not doing training, you're missing out, I think.
Absolutely.
I want to make one point on that. I talked to George quite a bit about his data, and we've talked about data on this call. But when it comes to the BDC portion of it, and call again, whatever you want, if you don't like the BDC acronym or call center acronym, it's just it's a predictable model of communication, right? I can as a business owner or an operator employ somebody that I can predict a certain amount of output from that person every single day, right? And we're kind of talking about this in terms of what AI can do for us now or some automations with some programs. But when it comes to the human element, if their only job is to communicate with a customer, I can predictably give them a set amount of activities to do per day. I can load their lips with call tracks or guides or words and phrases to say to every customer. Mm-hmm. We can have certain follow-up sequences, meaning I want at least 20 touches to every customer before we give up on them, right? So it's not so much more or less just a skill set all by itself. It's a predictability in a business model that says, I know I can count on X if I mandate Y.
Yep. Get it. Totally get it. I'm going to get one more question out because I think it's important because it's a hot topic on artificial intelligence, such a hot topic, driving. It's interacting in our customer experience now, and it's not going to go away. George, how are your stores leveraging AI to communicate with customers, if at all? And I'm going to ask you to also hint on, are you guys using any AI to answer, example, your service calls? So talk to us about AI a little bit, what you guys are doing.
I think I like to call this the modern day ABCs. I think there's three parts to it. There's AI, there's BI, and then you have CI. So artificial intelligence, business intelligence, and then customer intelligence. And when you can marry all three of those together, you can get really effective. But as far as AI goes, our CRM is DriveCentric, which is very forward thinking in their AI. They have an artificial intelligence that reaches out and tries to engage customers as soon as you get those opportunities. And it's pretty intelligent. artificial intelligence that can read through the transcripts of what's going on when the communication with the customer and does ongoing follow-up to try to move the deal forward, and pings the salesperson when there's something to pay attention to. And then Car Wars has its own kind of portion of AI as well, with the recognizing the voices of the people who are taking those calls and sending over transcripts and letting us know when there's opportunities that we need to pay attention to based on those recordings. So that's what we're utilizing right now, where we do utilize ChatGPT and things like that to construct some of our marketing materials, our content, our emails. And through our CRM, there's a function that you can utilize ChatGPT to help write better responses for people who aren't great wordsmiths, you know? So everything like that helps. We're also in the exploratory phase right now of looking at artificial intelligence through video, where you create like an avatar. I call it a deep fake. It's kind of creepy, but that's coming. I can guarantee you that's coming next.
For sure. I agree. And are you using any AI to answer service calls today? A lot of people are dipping their toe.
A little bit, but most of our service calls are answered by our in-house service BDC reps. Yeah.
I'm going to hit, because we only have a couple minutes left. Jamie, one of the things that Alex Hernandez wanted to make sure that you knew is the Six Sigma portion of this call was great. So if you didn't see that question, you should do that. And then
I just want to say one thing, because it kind of ties into like the BDC conversation, you know, the AI conversation, you know, all of that. I know there's hot topics about, you know, is artificial intelligence and technology going to take the place of humans? And you know what, as of today, it's not. But one thing that we're working on right now, because it will, there's no doubt about it. If we don't make a conscious effort inside of automotive to change and make it more about the business, dealers at this point need to reinvent themselves and reinvent how they interact with customers. And I'll leave you all, there is an Ernst & Young Mobility Consumer Index, and I'm going to read from it really quick, study that was done. And it shows the percentage of consumers that want to buy from dealerships. And we can see it, you know, albeit by small percentages, it's going down every year. And if customer sentiment, if we don't focus on the relationship, not only inside of our stores, but with our customers, we face inside of the retail world some significant problems. And with BDCs, you know, and you guys touched on it, and I agree with you that, you know, you've got a sales BDC and a service BDC, but our BDCs focus on the business. They don't focus on the consumer. And so right now we're looking at ways to improve that entire process, reimagine it with, you know, things that have been done, that could be done, leverage technology, because it's all about saving time, but most importantly, giving our teams a great experience and giving our customers a great experience, plain and simple. So if we change our mindset, it's not about developing business, it's about developing relationships. And there is a way, I promise, there's a way for us to be able to do that and succeed.
I agree. Let's use AI to help our people, not eliminate their jobs. And there's right. a way to do it. David asked a question about, so we were talking about social and digital marketing and calling efforts. And he's wondering if dealerships, dealer groups are taking advantage of the reemergence of direct mail to enhance their direct marketing campaigns. And are your agencies offering direct mail? Big Al responded, yes, that they do a lot. Anybody else want to comment on that question? George, you doing any mail?
You know, we do very, very little mail. The only time that we have done mail in the past is when we have a bunch of people coming out of lease. We would download the list of those customers and create a very customized message to them and then send it to them in a FedEx, which is actually very expensive. But yes. When somebody gets a FedEx package with their name, that makes them feel very special. And we got good ROI from that. But traditionally, we don't do a whole bunch of direct mail. We do a little bit for service marketing, but not much for sales, mainly digital.
We like to send socks in the mail.
Yeah, no, I love your socks. I've got them on right now.
I just got a box from Warby Parker in the mail with it. It's just a box that has little, you know, rubber ducks in it. And I'm like, what the hell is this?
You opened it.
But I'm like, dang, I opened it. And then I Googled it. You know, if it would have had a QR code in there, I would have scanned it. I'm saying I would have fallen for it.
I will put a caveat on as far as the direct mail that I use. It definitely varies per market on where it's effective. I'll tell you, in Metro Detroit, direct mail works. It just does. And then I don't know why, because I talk to, like George says, like he doesn't use it. And I talk to people all around the country. They're like, you still use direct mail? And like, it works in Detroit. But you know, then there's other markets it doesn't work in. So it's one of those things where I highly recommend if you're not using it, you know, it's worth trying, you know, but, you know,
track just, it.
Exactly. It's one of those things. But the biggest thing, if you're not using any type of direct mail in your retention center, as far as, you know, it's like we all have some type of retention tool that we're using, whether we're, you know, we're doing our email marketing, we're hitting them there. And there should be some type of direct mail followed up with that, again, for retention. I think it's just an extra touch point to your customers, and it's highly effective. You know, they might not read it, but they see it. You know, everybody opens the mailbox and they see it, you know, and it's one of those things that as a marketer, I always say, it's like, I'm either trying to push somebody in the market or I'm trying to pull them into the market, you know? And so by getting my name in front of them, it's helping pushing them into the market. So it's just another touch point.
Yeah, I agree. Okay.
Go ahead, George.
I was just saying, I agree with that. And to his point, varies by market and even by brand, you know, the brands you represent. So yeah, I'm not opposed to direct mail, and we do some direct mail through the OEM backed programs and stuff, but we don't do a lot of direct mail that we compile on our own. Yep.
That was a great question.
And it ties back to what Al had said, you know, in the beginning about vendors coming in and tailoring it to your unique business. I think the more as operators, we realize it isn't a one size fits all for every market, every brand, including like third party leads. You know, one may be successful in one market, not in another. And it really is representing the unique personality of who you are in your marketplace, inside of your community. And it's okay to be different and to be you. And Jacob, you touched on that as well with, you know, doing entertaining type of marketing. It reflects the personality of that store in that community. Like, hey, everyone, it's okay to have a personality. We don't have to die because we represent one brand.
Right.
Well, this was super fun, guys. I appreciate it. We have 1 minute left. And I was going to ask everyone, what do you, besides Car Wars, obviously you guys are all going to come see Car Wars at NADA. We're in the back hall, but we got a big booth and we want to meet with everyone. But anything else in the last 30 seconds that you need to see at NADA?
Anything with just to learn more about AI and becoming more efficient. Because by the way, the other part of Six Sigma is the lean part, which I didn't even talk about, but being able to be lean in our business, effective use of time. What can we use to get back time, you know, for our people on the front lines to be able to build better relationships.
Well, this is your second session, fireside chat with us, guys. So you signed up for one and we convinced you to do two. So we appreciate it so much. Thanks, Digital Dealer, for allowing us to host this. And if you guys have any questions, please email and we'll make sure to get them out to the group. But we really, really appreciate everybody joining today.